Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Thanks very much. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. We get such wisdom from all of our guests, and I hope you'll take advantage of the fact that you can listen to all of it from your smartphone while you exercise, while you drive. 20-minute interviews available at ExitCoachRadio.com right from your smartphone. Click on Audio Library, and you'll see 12 different topics, each with many, many interviews and one-minute highlights in there. Hope you'll take advantage of that and listen on the go, car into a rolling university. Speaking of that, my next guest is going to talk to us about how you can become a published author. And he is a retired trial lawyer and a current author. And, you know, someday you may leave your business, you may exit your business, you might find yourself with some time on your hands and think, I've always wanted to be an author. Well, our next guest is going to tell us all about what it takes to do that. He is Richard Katz. Richard, welcome to the show, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Richard, you're a retired trial lawyer and a current author. Tell us a little bit about your background, and have you always written, or is this a new career for you?
Well, I've always written, if nothing else, as a trial lawyer. You know, obviously I had to write a lot of briefs. But I wrote, actually starting in high school, I wrote some skits, and over the years I'd write, you know, short stories and occasional short plays. The theater was sort of my love, to be honest with you, and I started thinking about writing when I was thinking about retiring, and I wanted to be a playwright. I didn't really think about becoming a novelist or a screenplay, you know, a screenwriter. The route I took to becoming a novelist is kind of interesting. If you want to hear it, I'll tell you the story.
I'd love to hear it. You know, and it, before you get to that, you were an actor because you were a trial lawyer. You were on stage all the time, right? It worked out for you.
Yeah, you and also I took a lot of acting courses too. I took an improv course, and in fact, the teacher wanted me to join an improv group, but we did a couple of like amateur improv events, and it dawned on me that the people that were on stage with me were so much better than I was that I didn't belong there. So I begged off becoming part of the troupe, even though the teacher wanted me to become part of the group. But I realized I wasn't as good as them.
Who knows what might have happened, right?
Well, I do know what would have happened. I would have failed.
Okay, well, so tell us about it, about how your journaling your journalistic adventure.
So what happened was, around 15 years ago, I decided I wanted to start thinking about retiring and having some activity to keep me interested, keep my brain interested, I guess. And so I looked around for a playwriting course, because that's, as I said, what I wanted to do, and couldn't find one that was convenient for my time, the time I had available to take a course. But I found a screenwriting course at the College of Academy of Art in San Francisco. So in my ignorant state, I said, well, how different can screenwriting be from playwriting? Well, of course, it's completely different. Well, I wouldn't say completely, but it's different. Anyway, I took the course. I started taking the course, and they kicked me out of the course because, according to them, I was too advanced for the class. And the reason was that most of the people in the class were young kids who, according to the dean at the time, told me they couldn't string two sentences together that made sense. And they realized that as a trial lawyer, of course, I had to do a lot of writing and a lot of speaking, and that, you know, I was just head and shoulders over the people, and as I say, it was really more a testament to the fact I'd been a trial lawyer for 30 years at that point rather than my brilliance. And anyway, they kicked me out of the class, but in doing so, they actually gave me private lessons with the instructor.
Oh.
So, yeah, I mean, they, you know, I paid for the course, so they, but they just felt like I would overwhelm the class,
mm-hmm.
and the other students wouldn't participate as much. I don't know. I'm sort of making that up exactly. But anyway, they did kick me out of the class, and they gave me private lessons with the instructor. And after about 3 weeks, she asked me to write a screenplay with her. So I said, great, good idea. That's a pretty nice compliment that the teacher asked you to write a screenplay with her. I was working on a screenplay at the time that ultimately actually got approved to be produced into a screenplay, and then 9/11 came along, and they decided not to do it because there was too much violence in it, and they didn't want to do anything in Hollywood at that time, right after 9/11.
Sure.
But anyway, mm-hmm. we decided to write the screenplay, and the question was, what topic do we write about? So years earlier, I had been asked to represent a family to recover a stolen Holocaust painting. And after doing a lot of research at the time, I realized that my firm was not set up to represent her because it required international law and going overseas, and we were just too small of a firm to do it. And so I begged off of it. But I'd gotten interested in the subject matter. So around that time, there was an exhibit in New York City called Nazi Degenerate Art, which tried to duplicate an exhibit that the Nazis actually had in Munich in 1937. And Hitler, as most people know, Hitler and Goering, these people loved art. They were really big art collectors. But Hitler particularly liked traditional art. He didn't like avant-garde art or impressionist art. So he decided that they were going to put on an exhibit to show the public what modern art was to his way of thinking, i.e., and he called it degenerative art exhibit. At the same time, he put an exhibit on a classical artist. Well, the degenerate art exhibit outgrew the classical art exhibit by 5-1, and eventually he educated 3 million people about degenerate art, who preferred the degenerative art to the classic art. But anyway, that exhibit that New York put on at the time to sort of duplicate what the Nazis have done tied in with my thinking about this client that I had earlier represented was asked to represent. And I thought, well, let's write a story about stolen Holocaust art, which at that time hadn't been written. That Women in Gold hadn't been out, Monument Men hadn't been out. We wrote, as far as I know, the first, you know, literary work about that era and the events revolved around the Nazis did. So that's how I got into deciding to write about the subject matter and deciding to write seriously. And going to the topic of today, what I realized was, as a lawyer, I was a civil lawyer. I didn't do a lot of criminal work. I did a lot of civil litigation. I pretty much handled everything you could ask for. I did everything from airplane crashes to medical malpractice to business litigation, because I was a CPA before I was a lawyer, so I got a lot of business cases because I could understand complex business litigation. At least people thought so because of my CPA background. I forgot where I was going with that. I'm having a senior moment. I realized that, because I'd hired a bunch of experts to testify on behalf of my clients, I realized I knew what I didn't know. And I know a lot of people just start writing and they don't do anything to educate themselves about the art and craft of writing. So I decided I wasn't going to be one of those people. I was going to learn how to write from professionals. So I took a creative writing class. I took the screenwriting class. I started going to the Maui Writers Conference, which no longer exists, unfortunately. Went 5 years in a row. Attended seminars, conferences, and also there were workshops. There were like week-long workshops that they had, where world-renowned writers would actually teach a small class of 8 to 12 people, you know, techniques about writing. And it was wonderful. I mean, first of all, being immersed in a literary community like that, people that were really interested in the art form, it was a wonderful experience. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I learned a lot. I mean, one of my professors, for lack of a better word, they weren't called professors, they were called instructors, was Bryce Courtney. And he wrote a book, he wrote many, but the book he's most well known for is called The Power of One. And if you haven't read it, everybody should read that book. It's a phenomenal book. What you won't know at the time you're reading it is it's actually his life story, but it's written as a novel. And it's one of the largest, biggest-selling books in the history of fiction, or, of, you know, it really is. Every year it sells half a million copies, even now. He passed away about 2 years ago, Bryce did. But I learned a lot from him. He was a terrific instructor. And the point was that I learned how to write, I guess is the best way. I think I learned how to write, I guess I should say that.
Yeah.
And so I learned...
Yeah, I was wondering. A lot of people think, well, how hard could it be? It's just writing. But there's technique. I mean, there's writing for fun, and then there's writing to try to get published. Obviously, what are some of the, if you could just some of the quick key differences? I know it's very involved. It's very complicated. But what are some of the key differences or aha moments that you had when you were taking some of those courses?
Well, I'll give you an example. There was one course I took in Kauai. It was a week-long course, all day long, for 7 days. And one of the instructors was a guy named Michael Levine, who was a professor at UCLA. And he came up with, I call it a formula, but if you listen, it's a wonderful guideline to writing novels. And his formula was setup, conflict, resolution, hook. Set up, conflict, resolution, hook. And what he was saying was in every chapter and preferably in every paragraph, you should have those elements in your story. And the key word being hook. And it really impressed me. It stuck in my brain because you want to get people to turn the page. And if people go read my novel or go online on Amazon and see all the reviews I've gotten about my novel, time and time and time again, people say it's a page-turner, it's a page-turner, it's a page-turner.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I attribute that to Michael Levine because I pay a lot of attention to making sure when I'm at the end of a chapter that I leave you hanging, sort of like Pauline being on the railroad tracks, that makes you want to go read the next chapter. You want to keep your reader interested. So that's
mm-hmm.
one. I give you more, but that's just one that stands out of my brain because I paid attention to it, and B, you know, it seems like my readers appreciate me learning that. I guess the best way to say it.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's wonderful. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just thought going to all those courses and classes, there must have been some things that rose to the top, and that's fascinating. I like that. Okay,
There's one other. And this is something that came natural to me, I think. Because I was a trial lawyer, I kiddingly say to people, I've been putting words in people's mouths for 40 years. So writing dialogue is really hard. Let's put it this way. It's hard to write dialogue that readable and enjoyable to read. And really good dialogue is just uplifting. If you watch even a TV series, whatever, and the characters, you know, are really, they're talking in a way that you just know the difference between good dialogue and bad dialogue. Listen mm-hmm. to, and you may not know why, but when you hear good dialogue, it elevates your listening experience or viewing experience.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I remember someone saying is, you know, people don't talk to each other in kind of a didactic way. It isn't like, where were you born, New York, and how old are you, whatever. It's where were you born, and the answer should be, why are you asking? Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or you come home and you say, how was your day, honey? And she says to you, did you go to the doctor?
Right.
So,
right.
You get it?
Right, right.
So
yep.
What really good dialogue does, it's supposed to reveal character or it's for exposition purposes. And the two examples I gave you reveal character. They give you some idea of what's in the character's head that's responding to the original question, okay? What's important to them? And so when you write dialogue, you really got to pay attention to how it reads and how it sounds out. And one of the great things that I learned, and this I'd pass on to anybody who wants to learn how to write good dialogue, is write with someone else. if you can. And so when I wrote with Julie, who was my teacher, my screenwriting teacher, we would go to her office, we would write dialogue for the screenplay, and then we would role play. She would read the woman's part, because the central character of our screenplay and my novel is a woman, and I would be the guy. And we'd hear how that actually sounded when we actually, you know, said the words out loud, and it makes a difference. You go, wait a minute, people don't quite sound like what we wrote it. You know, it's a little subtle difference. Maybe there's a contraction, maybe there's not, things like that. So you learn a lot about how people really speak by saying the words out loud rather than just reading them off a screen.
Makes sense. So, yeah. That's great.
I have other examples too, but I could go on, you know, forever about writing.
Oh, no, it's very interesting. It's fascinating. I know a lot of people are thinking about what they might do with their lives and with time. And a lot of them, you know, we hear from a lot of life coaches and that type of thing. And they say, you know, go back to thinking about what you loved to do, what you might have said in your youth. I've always wanted to do X. And like you said, you're exploring that, and it's great. So tell us just a little bit. We only have a little bit of time left, but when you choose a topic, and you've told us a little bit about how you chose some of these topics, it was from an experience, and you think, it'll be interesting to me. Should that be a key that it's going to keep you engaged as a writer, number one, or are you writing for your readers? And number two, how do you go about researching? These days you have the internet at your disposal, so it's must be pretty easy, but that must take a lot of discipline. So could you address that again, choosing the topic and who should it, how do you go about that? And then how do you research?
Well, it's a very good question, actually. I'm glad you asked that, because the common advice that people gave me was write something you know. So the first screenplay I wrote was a legal thriller, okay? But it dawned on me, you know, I wanted to get out of the legal profession. You know, I wanted to get away from it. I wanted my brain, particularly when I was writing, to think about other things, and I had other interests. And so I think you should write about something that you're really interested in, even if you don't know that much about it. And then, you, of course, the next question you've already asked is then you got to go about the process of researching. So I'd love to, you know, I don't know how much time we have, but the research I did for this novel would blow you away. But it was exhilarating. It was fun. We actually went to Europe to visit the places we wrote about, because the screenplay and now my novel is based on a series of true historical events that happened. And we wanted to make the novel / screenplay as accurate as possible. So we visited these places, and in doing so, I learned things that I never would have known. You could read about it all you want, you wouldn't have known. By way of example, one of the key events that happens in my book, and actually happened historically, happens at a place called Schloss Karnsow. Schloss means castle in German. And it's at a castle that's 50 miles northwest of Berlin, where some of the stolen paintings were actually hidden behind a false wall in a castle, and the Russians came and eventually found it and brought them back. But the point was, I was in that castle and found out things about the castle that I use in the story that I would not have known about just by reading. But you're right. Today's world, it wasn't true when I wrote this originally. You can get almost anything you need online. Not anything, but pretty much 90% of what you need to find. If you do enough research, you can find it online. And you got to do it. You got to spend time making your story. Because even if you write a novel, you want the places you're talking about to be accurate, to feel right. And you just can't start talking about something. You know, if you name the street wrong, or the corner is all wrong, or if you say there are trees on the street that are elms when actually they only have maples there, people pick up on that kind of stuff. So you try and make it as accurate as possible. I could go on, but I don't know how much time I have.
I'm fascinated, because it sounds like in some way you gave yourself a new energy, a new purpose to look at traveling and looking at things in a new and energized kind of a way, because this is no longer a tourist expedition. This was a research trip, and you're trying to live something so that you can relive it for your readers. And I think that's a fascinating way to live life.
Well, that also made the trip so much more interesting, because you're right. We had a purpose when we went on that trip, and we ran into, you tell people you're writing about something, my God, they open their doors. They can't wait to help you. I mean, as an example, when we went to the castle, it was being converted into a conference center at the time. There was barbed wire fences all around it. And I was there with a guide because my German's bad. And one of the workers came to my guide and said, why are you here? And she told him that, you know, we were researching a screenplay we were writing. And they said, oh, you know, the owner lives three blocks down the street. And my guide goes running down the street, finds the owner. The owner literally, she's a wonderful woman, came running down the street. She couldn't wait to open the barbed wire fence, gave us a personal tour of the castle, showed us where the paintings had been hidden, and how, I mean, it was like an amazing thing. And I'd never met her. You know, she just couldn't wait to open the doors. And I had two or three other experiences like that. It was awesome. Even though I was not a known author and my co-writer was not a known author, the fact we told him we were writing about something, we got instant credibility.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
It's Snoop Dogg, and it's Sunday, and I'm still in my PJs. I'm going to wear them all day. Going to close my curtains, turn on the AC, make a fire, and pretend I'm snowed in. Sure, it's environmentally irresponsible, but it's also fun as hell.
Sounds like a plan, Snoop. But did you know that tomorrow, only at Old Navy, all sleepwear is 50% off, starting at $8. Plus, right now, everything else in the store is 40% off, now till Wednesday.
It sounds like I better run to Old Navy, baby.
Excludes gift cards.